Chapter 30. There was no problem in arranging for Hradsky's absence. Someone had to go to London. There was machinery to buy for the new areas on the East Rand, and they had to select two engineers from the 100 or so applicants waiting in England. Not ungraciously, Hradsky allowed himself to be elected for the job. "We'll give him a farewell party," Duff suggested to Sean during dinner that night. "Well, not really a farewell party, but a wake." Sean started whistling the Dead March, and Duff tapped it out on the table with the handle of his knife. "We'll have it at Candy's hut—" Duff cut himself short. "We'll have it here. We'll lay it on for poor old Norman, so afterwards he'll be able to say, 'The bastards may have cleaned me out, but they certainly gave me a grand party.'" "He doesn't like parties," said Sean. "That's an excellent idea. Why, we should give him one," agreed Duff. A week later, when Hradsky and Max left on the morning coach for Port Natal, there were 50 members of the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, still in full evening dress from the night's party, to wave him goodbye. Duff made a touching, if somewhat slurred, little speech and presented Hradsky with a bouquet of roses. Nervous of the crowd that milled about them, the horses bolted when the driver cracked his whip, and Max and Hradsky were thrown together in an undignified heap on the rear seat of the coach. The crowd cheered them out of sight. With an arm around his shoulder, Sean led Duff across the street to the office and deposited him in one of the deep leather armchairs. "Are you sober enough to talk sense?" Sean asked dubiously.
"Sure. Always at your service," as the lady said to the customer.
"I managed to have a word with Max last night," Sean told him. "He'll send us a telegram from Port Natal when he and Hradsky are safely on the mailboat. We won't start anything until we receive it."
"Very wise. You're the wisest chap I know,"
Duff grinned happily. "You'd better go to bed," Sean told him.
"Too far," said Duff. "I'll sleep here."
It was another 10 days before Max's telegram arrived. Sean and Duff were eating lunch in the Rand Club when it was delivered to their table. Sean slid open the envelope and read the message to Duff. "Sailing 4 o'clock this afternoon. Good luck, Max."
"I'll drink to that."
Duff lifted his wine glass. "Tomorrow," said Sean, "I'll go up to the Candy Deep and tell Francois to pull all the men out of the bottom levels of the mine. No one's to be allowed in."
"Put a guard at the 14th level," suggested Duff. "That'll make it more impressive."
"Good idea," agreed Sean. He looked up as someone passed their table, and suddenly he started to smile.
"Duff, do you know who that is?"
"Who are you talking about?" Duff looked bewildered.
"That chap has just gone out of the lounge. There he is, going into the lavatories."
"Isn't that Elliot, the newspaper fellow?"
"Editor of the Rand Mail," nodded Sean. "Come with me, Duff."
"Where are we going?"
"To get a bit of cheap publicity."
Duff followed Sean out of the dining room, across the lounge and into the men's lavatories. The door of one of the closets was closed, and as they walked in, someone farted softly behind it. Sean winked at Duff and went across to the urinal. As he addressed himself to it, he said,
"Well, all we can hope for now, Duff, is that Norman will be able to work a miracle in England. Otherwise—"
He shrugged his shoulder.
Duff picked up his cue. "We're taking a hell of a chance relying on that. I still say we should sell out now. CRCs were at 91 shillings this morning. so it's obvious that the story hasn't leaked out yet. But when it does, you won't be able to give the bloody shares away. I say we should get out while the going's good.
No, Sean disagreed. Let's wait until we hear from Norman.
It's taking a bit of a chance, I know. But we have a responsibility to the men working for us.
Sean took Duff's arm and led him out of the lavatory again. At the door, he added the cherry to the top of the pie.
If and when CRC collapses, there are going to be thousands of men out of work. Do you realize that?
Sean closed the door behind them, and they grinned delightedly at each other.
You're a genius, laddie, whispered Duff.
I'm happy to say I agree with you, Sean whispered back. The next morning, Sean woke with the knowledge that something exciting was going to happen that day. He lay and savoured the feeling before he sent his mind out to hunt for the reason. Then he sat up suddenly and reached for the newspaper that lay folded on the coffee tray beside his bed. He shook it open and found what he was looking for on the front page. Big headlines. Is all well with the Central Rand consolidated? Norman Horadsky's mystery journey. The story itself was a masterpiece of journalistic evasion. Seldom had Sean seen anyone write so fluently or convincingly on a subject about which he knew nothing. It is suggested, usually reliable sources report, and there is reason to believe all the old phrases of no significance. Sean groped for his slippers and padded down the corridor to Duff's room. Duff had all the blankets and most of the bed. The girl was curled up like a pink anchovy on the outskirts. Duff was snoring, and the girl whimpered a little in her sleep. Sean tickled Duff's lips with the tassel of his dressing gown cord. Duff's nose twitched, and his snores gurgled into silence. The girl sat up and looked at Sean with eyes wide but vacant from sleep.
"Quickly, run!" Sean shouted at her. "The rebels are coming!"
She leapt straight into the air and landed 3 feet from the bed, quivering with panic. Sean ran a critical eye over her. A pretty filly, he decided, and made a mental note to take her for a trot just as soon as Duff put her out to grass. "All right," he reassured her. "They've gone away now." She became aware of her nakedness and Sean's frank appraisal of it. She tried to cover it with her hands, but they were too small for the task. Sean picked up Duff's gown from the foot of the bed and handed it to her. "Go and have a bath or something, sweetheart. I want to talk to Mr. Charleywood." With the gown on, she recovered her composure and told him severely,
"I didn't have any clothes on, Mr. Courtney."
"I would never have guessed," said Sean politely.
"It's not nice."
"You're too modest. I thought it was better than average. Off you go now, there's a good girl." With a saucy flick of her head, she disappeared into the bathroom, and Sean transferred his attention to Duff. Duff had held grimly onto the threads of sleep throughout the exchange, but he let go when Sean whacked him across the backside with a folded newspaper. Like a tortoise coming out of its shell, his head emerged from the blankets. Sean handed him the paper and sat down on the edge of the bed. He watched Duff's face crease into laughter lines before he spoke. "You'd better get down to the editor's office and shout at him a little, just to confirm his suspicions. I'll go up to the Candy Deep and close all the bottom levels. I'll meet you back at the exchange at opening time. And don't forget to clean that grin off your face before you show it around town. Try and look haggard. Shouldn't be difficult for you." When Sean arrived at the Stock Exchange building, the crowd had filled the street outside. Ember Janey eased the landau into it, and it opened to give them a passage. Sean scowled straight ahead and ignored the questions which were shouted at him from all around. MB Janey stopped the carriage outside the main entrance, and four police constables held back the mob while Sean hurried across the pavement and through the double doors. Duff was there ahead of him, the centre of a turbulent circle of members and brokers. He saw Sean and waved frantically over the heads of his inquisitors. That was sufficient to switch their attention from Duff to Sean, and they flocked to him, ringing him in with anxious, angry faces. Sean's hat was knocked forward over his eyes, and a button popped off his coat as one of them caught hold of his lapels. "Is it true?" the man shouted, spittle flying from his lips into Sean's face. "We've got a right to know if it's true." Sean swung his cane in a full overarm stroke into the man's head and sent him tottering backwards into the arms of those behind him. "Back, you bastards!" he roared at them, using both the point and the edge of his cane to beat them away, scattering them across the floor until he stood alone, glowering at them, with the cane still twitching restlessly in his hand. "I'll make a statement later on. Until then, behave yourselves." He adjusted his hat, picked the loose thread where the button had been from his coat, and stalked across to join Duff. He could see Duff's grin starting to lift the corner of his mouth, and he cautioned him silently with his eyes. Grim-faced, they walked through into the members' lounge. "How's it going to end?" Duff kept his voice low. "Couldn't be better." Sean contrived a worried expression. "I've got an armed guard on the 14th level. When this bunch hear about that, they'll really start frothing at the mouth." "When you make your statement, let it ring with obvious false confidence," Duff instructed. "If it goes on like this, we'll have the shares down to 35 shillings within an hour of opening." 5 minutes before opening time, Sean stood in the president's box and made his address to his fellow members. Duff listened to him with mounting admiration. Sean's hearty reassurances and verbal sidestepping were enough to strike despair into the souls of the most hardened optimists. Sean finished his speech and climbed down from the box amid a gloomy lack of applause. The bell rang, and the brokers stood singly or in small, disconsolate groups about the floor. The first tentative offer was made. "I sell CRC." But there was no rush to buy. 10 minutes later, there was a sale recorded at 85 shillings, 6 shillings lower than the previous day's closing price. Duff leaned across to Sean. "We'll have to start selling some of our own shares to get things moving. Otherwise, everybody's going to keep sitting on the fence." "That's right," Sean nodded. "We'll buy them back later at a quarter of the price. But wait until the news about the Candy Deep gets out." It was just before 10 o'clock when that happened. The reaction was sharp. In one quick burst of selling, CRCs dropped to 60 shillings. But there they hung, fluctuating nervously in the chaos of hope and doubt. "We'll have to sell now," whispered Duff. "They're short of script. We'll have to give it to them, otherwise the price will stick there." Sean felt his hands trembling, and he clenched them in his pockets. Duff was showing signs of the strain as well. There was a nerve jumping in his cheek, and his eyes had receded into their sockets a little. This was a game with high stakes. "Don't overdo it. Sell 30,000. The price of CRCs sagged under the weight, but levelled out at 45 shillings. There was still another hour until high change, and Sean's whole body was screwed up tight with tension. He felt the cold patches of sweat under his arms. "Sell another 30,000, he ordered his clerk. and even to himself his voice sounded wheezy. He stubbed out his cigar in the copper ashtray next to his chair. It was already half full of butts. It was no longer necessary for either of them to act worried. This time the price stuck at 40 shillings, and the sale of 60,000 more of their shares failed to move it down more than a few shillings. "Someone's buying up," muttered Sean uneasily. "It looks like it," agreed Duff. "I'll lay odds it's that bloody Greek, Ephthivoulos. It looks as if we'll have to sell enough to glut him before they'll drop any further." By high change, Duff and Sean had sold 3/4 of their holdings in CRCs, and the price still stood stubbornly at 37 and sixpence. So tantalizingly close to the magic figure that would release a flood of Hiradsky's shares onto the unprepared market. But now they were nearing the stage when they would no longer have any shares with which to force the price down that last 2 and 6. The market closed and left Duff and Sean sitting limply in their armchairs, shaken and tired as prize-fighters at the end of the 15th round. Slowly the lounge emptied, but still they sat on. Sean leaned across and put his hand on Duff's shoulder. "It's going to be all right," he said. "Tomorrow it'll be all right." They looked at each other, and they exchanged strength, each of them drawing it from the other, until they were both smiling. Sean stood up. "Come on, let's go home." Sean went to bed early and alone. Although he felt drained of energy, sleep was a long time coming to him, and when it did, it was full of confused dreams and punctuated with sharp jerks back into wakefulness. It was almost a relief to see the dawn define the windows as grey squares, and to be released from his unrewarding rest. At breakfast, he drank a cup of coffee, and found that his stomach was unable to accept the plateful of steak and eggs that was offered it, for it was already screwing up tight in anticipation of the day ahead. Duff was edgy and tired-looking as well. They spoke only a little during the meal, and not at all in the carriage, when M.B. Janey drove them down to the exchange. The crowd was outside the stock exchange again. They forced their way through it and into the building. They took their seats in the lounge, and Sean looked round at the faces of his fellow members. In each of them were the marks of worry, the same darkness round the eyes, and the jerkiness and movement. He watched Jock Haynes yawn extravagantly, and had to do the same. He lifted his hand to cover his mouth, and found it was trembling again. He laid the hand on the arm of his chair and kept it still. Across the lounge, Bonzo Barnes caught Sean's eye and looked away quickly. Then he also gaped into a cavernous yawn. It was the tension. In the years ahead, Sean would see men yawn like that while they waited for the dawn to send them against the Boer guns. Duff leaned across to him and broke his line of thought. "As soon as the trading starts, we'll sell. Try and panic them. Do you agree?" "Sudden death," Sean nodded. He couldn't face another morning of that mental agony. "Couldn't we offer shares at 32 shillings and sixpence and get it over with?" he asked. Duff grinned at him. "We can't do that. It's too obvious. We'll just have to go on to offering to sell at best and let the price fall on its own." "I suppose you're right. But we'll play our high cards now and dump the rest of our shares as soon as the market opens. I don't see how the price can possibly hold after that." Duff nodded. He beckoned to their authorized clerk, who was waiting patiently at the door of the lounge. and when the man came up to them, he told him, "Sell 100,000 CRCs at best." The clerk blinked, but he jotted the order down on his pad and went out onto the main floor where the other brokers were gathering. It was a few minutes from the bell. "What if it doesn't work?" Sean asked. The tightness in his belly was nauseating him. "It must work. It's got to work," Duff whispered, as much to himself as to Sean. He was twisting his fingers round the head of his cane and chewing against clenched teeth. They sat and waited for the bell, and when it rang, Sean jumped, then reached sheepishly for his cigar case. He heard the clerk's voice raise sharply, "I sell CRCs!" And then the confused mumble of voices as the trading started. Through the lounge door, he saw the recorder chalk up the first sale, 37 shillings. He drew hard on his cigar and lay back in his chair, forcing himself to relax, ignoring the restless tapping of Duff's fingers on the arm of the chair next to him. The recorder wiped out the figures and wrote again, 36 shillings. Sean blew out cigar smoke in a long jet. "It's moving," he whispered, and Duff's hand clenched on the arm of the chair, his knuckles paling from the pressure of his grip. 35. The elusive number at last. Sean heard Duff sigh next to him, and his voice, "Now, watch it go, laddie. Now the banks will come on. Get ready, laddie, get ready now." 34 and 6, wrote the recorder. "They must come in now," said Duff again. "Get ready to get rich, laddie." Their clerk was coming back across the floor and into the lounge. He stopped in front of their chairs. "I managed to sell them, sir." Sean straightened up quickly. "So soon?" he asked. "Yes, sir. 3 big sales, and I got rid of them all. I'm afraid the last was only at 34 and 6. Sean stared back at the board. The figure was still at 34 and 6. "Duff, something's going on here. Why haven't the banks come in yet?" "We'll force them to offload." Duff's voice was unnaturally hoarse. "We'll force the bastards." He pulled himself half out of his chair and snarled at the clerk. "Sell another 100,000 at 30 shillings. The man's face went slack with surprise. "Hurry, man, do you hear me? What are you waiting for?" The clerk backed away from Duff. Then he turned and scurried out of the lounge. "Duff, for God's sake," Sean grabbed his arm. "Have you gone mad?" "We'll force them," muttered Duff. "They'll have to sell." "We haven't got another 100,000 shares. Sean jumped up. "I'm going to stop him." He ran across the lounge, but before he reached the door, he saw the sale being chalked up on the board at 30 shillings. He pushed his way across the crowded floor until he reached his clerk. "Don't sell any more," he whispered. The man looked surprised. "I've sold them already, sir." "The whole 100,000? There was horrified disbelief in Sean's voice. "Yes, sir. Someone took the lot in one batch." Sean walked back across the floor in a daze. He sank into the chair beside Duff. "They're sold already." He spoke as though he didn't believe it himself. "We'll force them. We'll force them to sell," muttered Duff again, and Sean turned to him with alarm. Duff was sweating in little dewdrops across his forehead, and his eyes were very bright. "Duff, for God's sake," Sean whispered to him. "Steady, man." Sean knew that they were watched by everybody in the lounge. The watching faces seemed as large as those seen through a telescope, and the buzz of their voices echoed strangely in his ears. Sean felt confused. Everything seemed to be in slow motion, like a bad dream. He looked through into the trading floor and saw the crude number 30 still chalked accusingly against CRC. Where were the banks? Why weren't they selling?
We'll force them. We'll force the bastards, Duff said again.
Sean tried to answer him, but the words wouldn't come. He looked back across the trading floor, and now he knew it was a bad dream. For Horadsky and Max were there, walking across the floor towards the members' lounge. Men were crowding around them, and Horadsky was smiling and holding up his hands as if to fend off their questions. They came through into the lounge, and Horadsky went to his chair by the fireplace. He lowered himself into it with his shoulders sagging forward and his waistcoat wrinkled tightly around the full bag of his belly. He was still smiling, and Sean thought that his smile was one of the most unnerving things he had ever seen. He watched it with flesh-crawling fascination, and beside him, Duff was just as still and stricken. Max spoke quickly to Horadsky, and then he stood up and walked across to Sean and Duff. He stopped in front of them.
The clerk informs me that you have contracted to sell to Mr. Horadsky 500,000 shares in CRCs at an average price of 36 shillings.
Max's lashes drooped sadly onto his cheeks.
The total issue of CRCs, as you know, is 1 million shares. During the last 2 days, Mr. Horadsky was able to purchase another 75,000 shares, apart from the ones you sold to him. This makes his total holdings of CRCs almost 600,000 shares. It seems, therefore, that you have sold shares that don't exist. Mr. Horadsky foresees that you will have some difficulty in fulfilling your contract.
Sean and Duff went on staring at him. He turned to leave them, and Duff blurted out, "But the banks! Why didn't the banks sell?" Max smiled a mournful little smile.
The day he reached Port Natal, Mr. Horadsky transferred sufficient funds from his accounts there to liquidate his overdrafts in Johannesburg. He sent you that telegram and returned here immediately. We only arrived an hour ago.
But you lied to us. You tricked us.
Max inclined his head.
Mr. Charleywood, I will not discuss honesty with a man who does not understand the meaning of the word.
He went back to Horadsky's side. Everyone in the lounge had heard him, and while Duff and Sean went on sitting amongst the ruins of their fortune, the struggle to buy CRC shares started on the main floor. In 5 minutes the price was over 90 shillings and still climbing. When it reached 100 shillings, Sean touched Duff's arm.
"Let's go."
They stood up together and started for the door of the members' lounge. As they passed Horadsky's chair, he spoke.
"Yes, Mr. Charleywood. You can't win all the time."
It came out quite clearly, with only a slight catch on the C's. They were always difficult letters for Norman Horadsky. Duff stopped. He turned to face Horadsky, his mouth open as he struggled to find a reply. His lips moved, groping for words, but there were none. His shoulders drooped. He shook his head and turned away. He stumbled once at the edge of the floor. Sean held his arm and guided him through the excited jabber of brokers. No one took any notice of the two of them. They were bumped and jostled before they were through the crush and out onto the pavement. Sean signalled Embijani to bring the carriage. They climbed into it, and Embijani drove them up to Xanadu. They went through into the drawing-room. "Get me a drink, please, Sean." Duff's face was grey and crumpled-looking. Sean poured two tumblers half-full of brandy and carried one across to Duff. Duff drank, then sat, staring into the empty glass.
"I'm sorry. I lost my head. I thought we'd be able to buy those shares for dirt when the banks started selling."
"It doesn't matter." Sean's voice was tired. "We were smashed before that happened."
"Christ!
What a well-laid trap it was.
We couldn't have known. It was so damn cunning. We couldn't have guessed. Could we, Sean?"
Duff was trying to excuse himself. Sean kicked off his boots and loosened his collar. "That night, up at the mine dump, I could have staked my life Max wasn't lying." He lay back in the chair and stirred his brandy with a circular movement of his hand.
"Christ, how they must have laughed to see us stampede into the pitfall."
"But we aren't finished, Sean. We aren't completely finished,
are we?"
Duff was pleading with him, begging for a peg to hang his hope on.
"We'll come out of this all right. You know we will, don't you? We'll save enough out of the wreckage to start again. We'll build it all up again. Won't we, Sean?"
"Sure," Sean laughed brutally. "You can get a job down at the Bright Angels, cleaning out the spittoons, and I'll get one at the Opera House playing the piano.
But there'll be something left. A couple of thousand, even. We could sell this house."
"Don't dream, Duff. This house belongs to Hradsky. Everything belongs to him." Sean flicked the brandy that was left in his glass into his mouth and swallowed it. He stood up quickly and went across to the liquor cabinet.
"I'll explain it to you. We owe Hradsky 100,000 shares that don't exist. The only way we can deliver them is to buy them from him first, and he can set his own price on them. We are finished, Duff. Do you know what that means? Smashed! Broken!"
Sean poured brandy into his glass, slopping a little on the sideboard. "Have another drink on Hradsky. It's his brandy now." Sean swept his hand round the room, pointing at the rich furniture and heavy curtains. "Take a last look at this lot. Tomorrow the sheriff will be here to attach it. Then, through the due processes of the law, it'll be handed to its rightful owner, Mr. Norman Hradsky." Sean started back towards his chair, and then he stopped. "The due processes of the law," he repeated softly. "I wonder."
"It might just work."
Duff sat up eagerly in his chair.
"You've got an idea?"
Sean nodded. "Well, half an idea anyway. Listen, Duff, if I can save a couple of thousand out of this, do you agree that we get out of here?"
"Where? Where to? Where will we go?"
"We were facing north when we started. It's as good a direction as any. They say there's gold and ivory beyond the Limpopo for those who want it."
"But why can't we stay here? We could play the stock market."
Duff looked uncertain, almost afraid.
"Damn it, Duff. We're finished here. It's a different story playing the market when you're paying the fiddler and calling the tune. But with a mere thousand or so, we'd be among the dogs, fighting for the scraps under Hradsky's table.
Let's get out and start again. We'll go north, hunt ivory and prospect for a new reef. We'll take a couple of wagons and find another fortune. I bet you've forgotten how it feels to sit on a horse and handle a rifle, to have the wind in your face and not a whore or a stockbroker within 500 miles.
But it means leaving everything we've worked for,
Duff groaned. Sweet, merciful heavens, man! Are you blind or just plain stupid? Sean stormed at him. You don't own anything, so how the hell can you leave something you haven't got? I'm going down to see Hradsky. Try to make a deal with him. Are you coming? Duff looked at him without seeing him. His lips were trembling, and he was shaking his head. At last he was realizing the position they were in, and the impact of it had dazed him. The higher you ride, the further there is to fall. All right, said Sean. Wait for me here. Hradsky's suite was full of talking, laughing men. Sean recognized most of them as the courtiers who used to cluster round the throne on which he and Duff had sat. The king is dead. Long live the king. They saw him standing in the doorway, and the laughter and loud voices fizzled out. He saw Max take 2 quick steps to the stinkwood desk in the corner, pull open the top drawer, and drop his hand into it. He stood like that, watching Sean. One by one the courtiers picked up their hats and canes and hurried out of the room. Some of them mumbled embarrassed greetings as they brushed past Sean. Then there were only the 3 of them left, Sean standing quietly in the doorway, Max behind the desk with his hand on the pistol, and Hradsky in the chair by the fireplace, watching through yellow, half-hooded eyes. "Aren't you going to invite me in, Max?" Sean asked, and Max glanced quickly at Hradsky, saw his barely perceptible nod, and looked back at Sean. "Come in, please, Mr. Courtney." Sean pushed the door shut behind him. "You won't need the gun, Max. The game's over."
"And the score is in our favour, is it not, Mr. Courtney?"
Sean nodded. "Yes, you've won. We're prepared to make over to you all the CRC shares we hold." Max shook his head unhappily.
"I'm afraid it's not quite as easy as that. You've undertaken to sell us a certain number of shares, and we must insist upon delivery in full."
"Just where do you suggest we get them?" Sean asked.
"You could buy them on the stock exchange."
"From you?" Max shrugged, but made no reply. "So you're going to twist the knife, are you?"
"You put it very poetically, Mr. Courtney," agreed Max.
"Have you considered the consequences of forcing us into bankruptcy?"
"I will admit freely that the consequences to you do not concern us," Sean smiled.
"That was not very nice, Max, but I was talking about it from your point of view. Sequestration orders, creditors' meetings. You can rest assured that the liquidator appointed will be a member of the Volksrad, or a relative of one. There'll be court actions and counteractions, enforced sale of the shares in the estate and costs to pay. A liquidator with any sense at all could string it out for 3 or 4 years, all the time drawing a handsome commission."
"Have you thought about that, Max?"
The narrowing of Max's eyes showed that he hadn't. He looked at Hradsky with a trace of helplessness in his face, and Sean took a little comfort from that look. "Now, what I suggest is this. You let us draw 10,000, take our horses and personal belongings. We, in exchange, will give you the rest. Shares, bank accounts, property, everything. You can't hope to get more out of it if you force us into bankruptcy. Hradsky gave Max a message in their private facial code, and Max interpreted it for Sean.
Would you mind waiting outside, please, while we discuss this offer of yours?
I'll go down and have a drink in the bar, said Sean. He pulled his watch from his waistcoat pocket and checked the time. Will 20 minutes be enough?
Ample thank you, Mr. Courtney.
Sean had his drink by himself, although the bar was nowhere near empty. This was not an arrangement of his own choosing, but he was flying the fever flag of failure, and so he had to take an isolation berth at one end of the bar, while all the other ships steered wide of him. No one looked in his direction, and the conversation that went on round him was carefully arranged so as to exclude him. While he waited out the 20 minutes, he amused himself by imagining the reactions of these, his friends, if he were to ask them for a loan. This helped to take the sting out of their snubs, but still he felt it rankling. He looked at his watch again. The 20 minutes were up. Sean walked back along the counter towards the door. Jock and Trevor Haynes saw him coming. They turned away abruptly and immediately became absorbed in staring at the bottle-lined shelves behind the bar counter. Sean stopped level with Jock and cleared his throat deferentially.
Jock, could you spare a minute?
Jock turned slowly. Ah, Sean.
Yes, what is it?
Duff and I are leaving the Rand.
I have something for you, just something to remember us by. I know Duff would want you to have it too.
Jock reddened with embarrassment.
That's not necessary, he said, and started to turn back to his drink.
Please, Jock.
Oh, all right.
Jock's voice was irritable.
What is it?
This, Sean said, and stepped forward, moving his weight behind the fist. Jock's large and whiskey-flushed nose was a target to dream about. It was not one of Sean's best punches, he was out of training, but it was good enough to send Jock in a spectacular back somersault over the counter. Dreamily, Sean picked up Jock's glass and emptied it over Trevor's head.
Next time you meet me, smile and say hello, he told Trevor. Until then, stay out of mischief.
He went up the stairs to Hradsky's suite in much better spirits. They were waiting for him.
Give me the word, Max.
Sean could even grin at him.
Mr. Hradsky has very generously...
How much?
Sean cut him short.
Mr. Hradsky will allow you to take 1,500 and your personal effects. As part of the agreement, you would give an undertaking not to embark on any business venture on the Witwatersrand for a period of 3 years.
That'll be too soon, said Sean. Make it 2,000 and you got a deal.
The offer is not open to discussion.
Sean could see they meant it. They didn't have to bargain. It was a statement.
All right, I accept.
Mr. Hradsky has sent for his lawyer to draw up the agreement. Would you mind waiting, Mr. Courtney?
Not at all, Max. You forget. I'm a gentleman of leisure now.